Welcome, Campbell. It's so nice to have you with us today.
Thanks, Elaine. It's great to be here.
Now, The Book Report is a fairly new show, and this is the first time we'll be speaking about books of poetry, so I'm very excited that you're here. I know that I'm very interested, and I believe our listeners are interested, in how and when you began writing.
Well, I think like almost all writers, I began not as a writer, but as a reader. And that's something that I was just always doing and was kind of, you know, famous for, as it were. Just loved reading. So it's no surprise to me that books became what I do for a living. But I wouldn't have known that writing books was what I was going to do for a living. So, well, not that I do it for a living, by the way, since I'm a university professor for a living. I write poetry just to entertain myself, basically. But I was writing like kids write. If they give you a choice in sixth grade to write a book report or write a story, I would always choose the story. You know, okay, if there's a creative project, I'll try that. But it wasn't serious. I didn't think I was a writer. But by the end of high school, I was already writing poetry, and then I knew I really liked it. And then, lo and behold, I just kept choosing the creative option like I did in sixth grade. And then if you keep choosing that option and you don't ever hit a wall you can't jump over, you end up here.
Right. How did you discover your unique voice? Because your work is very unique. So how did you discover that?
Well, I think that, discovering your voice is a big question. I mean, I teach creative writing. I'm constantly talking about that with my students. You know, you have to discover your voice. You have to develop your own voice. Of course, as soon as you discover your voice, what you want to do is then learn how to discover another voice and another voice, because we really don't just have one voice as writers. We have multiple voices. So for me, it was kind of plugging into popular culture and America, because I'd been taught to write poetry in college, university, in a kind of very old-fashioned way, and you had to write poems about very important subjects, you know, famous paintings in Italy or something, you know, things that were deemed appropriate for poetry. And I could do that, and I realized, though, I don't really care that much. I mean, there's nothing I had to say about a famous painting from the Italian Renaissance that 500 years of famous poets haven't already said. But the 7-Eleven, on the other hand, was something that I did have a lot to say about, and nobody had written poems about 7-Elevens, so I said, that's what I'm going to do. And it was really then, and that was when I was in graduate school, maybe I was 24 or so, I said, that's what I really need to be writing about, need to be talking about. And then I think my voice came in large part from identifying the real subject that I should be writing about.
I think that a lot of our readers and our listeners feel that they have a book inside them. Can you share your experience of first being published?
Yeah, first of all, I think that's true, that many, many people have books inside of them. Many, many people have voices, the writers' voices. They may not yet be writers, but it's kind of like, you know, it takes a while to tune your mental radio to hear your writer's voice that's inside of you. My own first publication, I mean, you know, was just getting a couple poems published. You know, that, I mean, getting a first book published was very exciting, but for me, I think more exciting was getting my very first poems published, which was in a literary magazine, The Ohio Review, and it was in maybe 1986 or 7. And I just remember, you know, it was, couldn't have been more exciting. And, you know, I got a check for $50, I'm pretty sure. And my wife and I went out and had a dinner in New York City. I was living in New York, and it just couldn't have been more exciting. I remember being told, actually, by someone who was a teacher of mine, that all checks like that you get, the $50, $100 that you get for writing poetry, that the appropriate god to dedicate them to was Bacchus. So really, they were for eating and drinking. That wasn't money you're supposed to save for some sensible purpose.
What advice do you have for poets in our audience?
Well, I don't think that poets are that different from other kinds of writers. You know, all writers should heed certain basic rules. You should be reading, and you should be writing, and you should be, you know, stealing as much time from, you know, what you have to do to make your real life work to cultivate your writing. I do think it's important to stress the reading role in that. I mean, I do think it's true. Every writer has, you know, begins as a reader, and really good writers continue as great readers. You know, as much as you learn through practicing your craft, you learn from reading others and saying, oh, look how that person did that. Oh, that's fascinating. Can I try that? Then you do try it. But you have to keep reading to expand your vision of what the art can do. I think poets are really the same as fiction writers in that. Just get your hands on poems you love. Try to imitate them. see where, you know, moving the pen down the paper is where, you know, the poem suddenly appears.
Have you ever have been overcome with a desire to cross over and write short stories or even fiction, long stories, long novels?
Not really. You know, I just, as a reader, I read novels. I mean, as a kid and as a young person, novels are what I loved. I didn't love poetry. I loved novels. I would love to be a great novelist. That sounds great. But when as a writer, what I really like is poetry. I mean, maybe that sounds weird, but I don't know. If you give me the two choices, one is really hard for me and one is easy. One seems like a real burden and difficult, and I just get frustrated by it. There's a lot of things you have to do in fiction that I'm just not interested in doing. I just want to already, you talk about voice, I want my voice to just be the poem. And in poetry, right, the very first word I write is my voice. I'm talking. I'm already directing the poem forward. In fiction, you have to establish the characters and paint three walls of the room and create this, you know, I'm like, I'm already bored of that room. I just want to start. So poetry allows me a kind of immediacy. I've written, I'll get asked to write an essay on a poet. And I'll say, okay, I'll write this essay. And after a week or two, I turn the essay into a poem and I send it to the editor and say, I'm sorry, it's a poem. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want it, I understand.
So who are you reading right now for pleasure?
Well, again, for pleasure, I read a lot of, fiction and a lot of nonfiction. I certainly read poetry, too. But I'm writing a book that won't be done for 3 or 4 or 5 years that's about the 20th century, a lot of figures in the 20th century, almost, kind of biographically. So I've been reading tons of biographies. I've been reading all about Pablo Picasso was one figure I was really interested in, I've been writing about, and John Lennon. I'm actually reading the big John Lennon biography right now that came out a year or two ago. It's very good. Mao, Chinese history, Chinese culture. So I've been reading a lot of, nonfiction of a sort to get my head around people's lives in the 20th century.
Well, you teach at Florida International University, and I'm wondering, do you feel that poetry resonates with today's college kids or with open mic nights, and is there a renaissance in American poetry?
Well, poetry really does resonate, yeah. Whether that's a renaissance is a kind of another question. But yes, I mean, within a university community, for instance, the liberal arts are, have been for 30 or 40 years shrinking. Literature, the humanities, these are shrinking. It used to be English was the largest subject studied, the largest major of many at many colleges. Now it's almost everywhere. It's business,
yes.
Pre-business administration, whatever you call a college business degree. It's business. It's all about getting training to go get a job in the marketplace, which of course I understand. But the growth area within humanities is creative writing. So in other words, there's no more kids maybe less interested in taking a Shakespeare class than they were 30 years ago, but there are more kids who actually want to try their own writing, whether that's fiction or poetry, and that's why we've seen an absolutely explosive growth in creative writing programs at universities around this country. There were 20 or 30 when I went to graduate school 30 years ago. There are 200 and something now. So kids really do want to write poems.
Well, so you're optimistic about the future of this art form?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's put it this way. This art form existed before there were any other art forms. I think before people were painting those bison on cavern walls in the, 50,000 years ago, people were chanting poems. They were maybe in the form of prayers or incantations, to make the corn grow and keep the tribe alive. You said magic words, and poetry actually stems from that impulse. So I don't think poetry's going anywhere because I think it's that old and that important. Is it going to suddenly take on a bigger, visible role in American culture? No, I do not think so. But that's, that's part of the accident of how American... I mean, our culture is not particularly literary. It's not even... Our culture is really, frankly, barely interested in having, chalk in the classroom for kids to learn how to read and write. So why would it be interested in something as completely, obscure as poetry?
Well, Florida International is a recipient of a grant from the Knight Foundation. How will that affect your creative writing program?
Oh, that's going to be great. I mean, for the Knight Foundation is, first of all, great. I mean, as listeners of public radio know, as people who, you'll see the Knight Foundation logo all the time attached to things that are about culture, about learning, about just informed citizenry. So it's a great organization. Here in Miami, it's particularly useful. Basically, all of the funding for the arts in Miami comes from the Knight Foundation. So I think... In this city, the you know, people talk about let's get the economy back on track, let's revitalize. It's been arts and culture that have been the driving force in Miami's improvement in the last decade, and I think that's really important. Specifically at FIU, in my writing program, the Knight Foundation is going to fund some grad students to, you know, on their track to learn to be writers. We're going to get to bring some great kids down here, give them some enhanced funding. They're going to not only, you know, do their own work as writers, they're going to be engaged in the community. They're going to be teaching in public schools. They're going to be working with arts organizations. So I view it as great for those young writers and also as a way to for FIU and for writers to get engaged in the community at all levels.
What current projects are you working on and what's ahead other than this biography that you were talking about?
Yeah, that book is called, you know, For the 20th Century or something, a kind of huge history of the 20th century. The last book I actually published inspired it. That's a book called Shannon, a poem of the Lewis and Clark expedition. And that book also is basically a biography. It's a long historical narrative of 16 days in the life of George Shannon, an 18-year-old kid who was on the Lewis and Clark expedition and who got lost and wandered around alone for 16 days.
How did you find out about him?
Yeah, I'm very interested in history and nonfiction. I read this stuff. And if you read the Lewis and Clark, which is unbelievably fascinating tale, great adventurer, very interesting people, there's this little footnote like, oh, by the way, this guy Shannon, who was otherwise not that important on the expedition, got lost. I just remember being fascinated. Wow, what would it be like for an 18-year-old kid to be totally alone wandering Nebraska in the time when, you know, Nebraska was called, like, was like an American Serengeti, wide open plains of buffalo herds and wolves and, you know, a few scattered tribes of Native Americans. And I just loved the idea of it, and I just thought to myself, I'm going to create that story. And really, a good question would be, why not write that as a novel, Campbell, you know, or why not make a movie about this? Because these are forms for telling stories that people actually care about and pay to go see. But I just, what I do is write poetry. So I wrote this long story in the form of a poem, you know, that's going to make it something that a far fewer people ever pay attention to, but that's just what I do. Hmm. So that, anyway, the paperback of Shannon is going to come out April. And I'll have another book out in 2012, a book of regular, as it were, poems, not a long historical project. That book's going to be called Nouns and Verbs.
I like that title.
Thanks.
Well, actually, we're going to be listening to one of your poems next, and thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks, Lane. My pleasure.
Bye.